biblical.
What he means is Old Testament, Mr.
Yes.
Mayor. Real wrath of God type stuff.
Exactly.
Fire and brimstone coming down from the skies. Rivers and seas boiling.
40 years of darkness, earthquakes, volcanoes.
The dead rising from the grave.
Human sacrifice, dogs and cats living together. Mass hysteria.
Enough, I get the point.
But what if you're wrong?
If I'm wrong, nothing happens. We go to jail, peacefully, quietly. We'll enjoy it. But if I'm right, and we can stop this thing, Lenny, you will have saved the lives of millions of registered voters.
Welcome to another edition of the Guelph Politicast. I'm Adam A. Donaldson with Guelph Politico, and you're listening to our 2014 election coverage of the municipal election here in Guelph. As you probably already know, these current podcasts are featuring interviews with the mayoral candidates who are running in the Royal City. You may have already listened to the interviews with Jean Legere and Jason Blockhouse, and we have another candidate up for you today. But first, I just want to remind everyone that if you are interested in learning more about the candidates running in your ward, or if you're interested in listening to the podcast with the mayoral candidates, go to the Meet the Candidates page on the Guelph Politico blog. It is that image of City Hall that says your face here. Click on that. It will take you to the page. And then if you want to see the candidate questionnaire responses from the various ward candidates, or if you want to listen to a particular mayoral candidate's podcast, just click on the name and it will take you right to them. And by all means, inform yourself in terms of what's going on, in terms of what they think are the important issues and what they make of the other issues in the campaign about taxation and spending and the transit lockout and all the things people are talking about, why they wanted to run. So check that out. As for today's Politicast, we are talking to Andrew Donovan. Andrew Donovan is probably the youngest candidate. Actually, I don't think probably. I think he is the youngest candidate. He's 24 years old. He's a recent University of Guelph grad, and like me, he is a former section editor of the student paper The Ontarian. He has an interesting perspective on the race, as he is the only self-described libertarian candidate. He's running on a varied platform that includes privatization of transit, reorganizing how Guelph taxis are run, looking at the bylaws, reining in spending, and taking a look at how and why we spend on various capital projects in order to rein in Guelph's debt. He's very concerned about that particular subject. But at the same time, he's also concerned about what all libertarians are concerned about, which is too much government. I think it's a very, very interesting conversation. He has a lot of interesting ideas about issues that a lot of people are talking about. I don't hear a lot of talk about the taxis, for instance. And it's something that should be addressed, I think, if you've ever tried to get a cab between the hours of 11 and 3 on Thursday, Friday, or Saturday night, even if it's not to party, even if maybe you're just coming back from Toronto late, or who knows why you might be out and about that late on the weekend if you're not going downtown to pub crawl. And he also has experience that way. I'll let him talk about it. Without further ado, this is Andrew Donovan, who I caught up with recently in downtown Guelph. So Andrew Donovan, thanks for joining me today.
Thank you for having me.
First of all, I guess the most obvious question for any candidate is why did you want to run for mayor of Guelph?
I always wish I had an easy an easy answer for this, but it's twofold, at the very least. And obviously, there's the political side to why I'm going to run for mayor. I feel that Guelph's at a point right now where there's kind of two sides in the city that are going head to head. The side that likes the status quo and the side that sees that there needs to be a lot of change. And I'm on the side of change here. Mm-hmm. And when I saw the size of Guelph's debt, how the taxes keep rising, and especially now being in the workforce, you see that firsthand, how taxes affect you on a bi-weekly basis, or bi-monthly basis, I guess. I decided that now is the time for change, and I did some research into the candidates that were running in the city of Guelph, and I didn't feel that any of them met my libertarian standards, I guess you could put it. I'm a self-declared libertarian, and I meet with a little group every month here in Guelph, and we talk about politics and certain things that go on and municipally, provincially, and federally. They encouraged me to run. Mm. So when I found out after I graduated from the University of Guelph that I had a job in Guelph and then I got a house, I said, well, now all the cards are in place, so let me put forward my candidacy. And that's the political side of it. Mm. On the personal side, I didn't want to graduate from university at 24 years old and jump straight into the workforce. I mean, granted, I'm in the workforce now, and that's how I'm you know, helping fund my campaign and fund my future. That's a necessity in life, but I wanted to do something different, and I've never believed that just because I'm a certain age or I haven't done certain things in my life that should be an obstacle as to why I can't do what I want to do. Mm. And I saw this as an opportunity to do something cool with my time and come home from work and work on this campaign and go on the weekend and campaign around the city of Guelph and engage people, young and old, in different conversations regarding politics, the social life in Guelph, and how we can make that more cohesive and run more efficiently. It just comes down to wanting to do fun things with my life and escape the norm of every day.
Mm-hmm. Well, you just mentioned you're a recent university graduate, you're 24 years old, and I think maybe the first criticism of you people are going to say is, well, you're too young, or you don't have enough experience to be mayor. What's your response to that?
Yeah, I am young. I mean, there's no denying that. Relatively speaking, compared to the rest of the candidates, sure, I'm young. I think people are going to get past that, or at least I would hope they would, when they hear my message and they hear me talk about the points of my campaign, particularly speaking to debt and taxes, and they hear the conviction that I have in my answers, that they're going to agree with me based on principle, not based off popularity or the status quo or just because I'm young. I think that when you do hear my points and you hear me debate other people with these points, you're going to hear conviction. Mm. And you're going to hear somebody that's passionate in what he believes in. And you're going to hear somebody that is diplomatic as well. And yes, I have a lot of ideas, and yes, some people may consider them radical, but I'm here to work with the city of Guelph and work with the people here and get to know the city better in my time here. So, yeah, I'm young, I'm hungry, I want more, and I think that now is a great time for me to jump into the political ring and at least make my name known around the city of Guelph.
Mm-hmm. So would it be fair to say that you agree with a lot of people who are watching this campaign and saying that the city is, in terms of property taxes, overtaxed, and that we have a spending problem?
Yeah, and I address that quite extensively in my platform. Mm-hmm. Basically, my opinion is that we have to prioritize in the city of Guelph between wants and needs. And I think, you know, people look at the blueprints as an example for St. George Square, the renovation they're proposing to do to it. Mm-hmm. So, wow, that could potentially look nice. But you're looking at a city right now with at least $118 million in debt, and it's continually rising, and one of the highest tax rates in the province of Ontario. And I think the people of Guelph have reached a point now where they're seeing all their money being funneled into projects they don't necessarily believe in, by incompetent staff at City Hall, and they're not getting the services that they want. And people are finally asking the question, you know, when is enough enough? Mm-hmm. And I propose that now is enough. And now we can start really looking at our rampant spending, our rampant taxation, and find ways to work with the public to not diminish services, but reconstruct them in a way that'll save the taxpayers money and benefit the city in general.
So you're not looking at necessarily cuts to things, you're just looking at things organizationally.
I'd say both. I'm absolutely open to the idea of, I wouldn't say cuts, I'd say more looking at privatization or a public-private partnership between, obviously the city of Guelph and certain third parties that we contract out to do certain services. Mm-hmm. For me, that's one of the ideal ways I'd like to look at to minimize the year-over-year costs the city has for things like public transit and waste management and road repairs and infrastructure in general.
Well, that's a good segue because in your platform, one of the things you did talk about is privatizing Guelph Transit, and the city did experiment. Your platform points, just to get there, is you talk about looking to businesses in the city to help supplement this service and run it. The city did look at that with the tourism office 2 years ago with the budget, and there were absolutely no takers. So, is this a reality? Can this actually happen? I mean, because Guelph does have a past where transit was run privately. Sleeman Brewery, the original Sleeman Brewery, ran streetcars back and forth from its brewery. So where do you stand?
I think that as the economic situation in North America and in Europe, I know this sounds like such a broad, ambiguous, overused term, the economic situation, you always feel like it's a dog whistle word. And I mean, it certainly is, but it does hold merit as well. But nevertheless, as cities are more strapped for cash, offers like privatization or public-private partnerships are becoming more of a reality in everyday society. And we're, 5-10 years ago, you wouldn't hear this conversation at all. Now in 2014 and going forward, this is a conversation that cities are going to be having more often. And I point to the fact in my platform that the York region runs a very efficient public-private partnership. Mm-hmm. In fact, they're running so well that in the York region now, they're going to start expanding the highways, and the highways are going to start having bus-only lanes to get people from point A to B within the five cities that make up the York region. As fast as possible with little traffic. I know the city of Edmonton is experimenting with public-private partnerships, and we're seeing this happen all over the Western world where we're strapped for cash, but we need to keep up the services because people rely on these services to get to work, and not everyone could afford to have a car. So, yeah, we may have looked at it 2 years ago, but I think there's an opportunity right now to relook at it and see how the other cities are using public-private partnerships and adapting something like that in Guelph and making it work.
How do you sell something like that? Because one of the things we often hear about is how transit is a loss leader because most of the people who use it regularly buy passes, which doesn't fill the coffers as much as people buying $3 per ticket, and a lot of the funding for transit does come out of the pool of the collected taxes. It's not just pay for play, as it were.
Yeah, like I said, it's going to be an experiment. Mm-hmm. I want to look at many different options. I mean, I say that I want to privatize or have a public-private partnership. If that's not the most efficient way to do this, then we're going to look at other options. I'm not opposed to looking at other options. I think that's the best way. And if we have to still have some type of a subsidy on the public's part through tax money, but we still get a private system that does, in the end of the day, cut costs and increase efficiency mm-hmm. in certain areas, then I think that the citizens of Guelph will be all for that. And I don't think it's any surprise. I mean, when you look at the service that the citizens of Guelph are getting with their buses, mm-hmm. that there is a serious lack of service or what I guess the citizens expect of a service and what the city is providing, and that needs to be addressed. I mean, I was only in school a year ago, and I can remember getting up in the morning and watching bus after bus whiz by saying, sorry, bus full. Yet we have buses going to the industrial section of Guelph with one person on it. I'm not saying that buses don't need to be in the industrial section of Guelph because it's a place where a lot of people in this city work. Mm-hmm. And we need buses out there. But we also need to recognize that the current bus system we have, the public transit system we have in Guelph, is extraordinarily insufficient.
Fair enough. One of the other things you address in your platform is repealing a couple of the bylaws, especially the noise bylaw. And you talked about the bylaw officers basically having the same entry rights as police officers. And I know that one of the Ward 5 candidates has had his own problem with this. Is there any specific example that sort of inspired you to include that in your platform?
I can give you a slew of examples, but I'm going to give you one from last weekend.
All right.
That happened, and I was at a friend's house, and they were in the backyard. A few people were in the backyard. A few people were in the house. There was no more than 15 people there. And bylaw shows up at 11:05, and they ask for the person to come outside. And I guess this person's already had one prior incident with the bylaw. And the bylaw officer said that if the person that owned this house or the tenant of this house had one more call this school year, mm-hmm. back to that house, that dwelling, that not only was she going to get a summons to appear in court, but that he was going to take her ID, run it, send it to the university. I'm not sure who at the university, wasn't very specific about this, and have her put on academic probation because of a noise complaint. Is this real? And I was out there with her when this was all happening, and I asked the bylaw officer, is this really the relationship that bylaw and the city wants to have with the students? Mm. Do we want to have a city where just because you get a noise complaint or a couple of noise complaints that you're going to be put on academic probation? And is that even just? Is the fact that you live
is
in...
Is that even possible?
Is that even possible? These are the things I want to know. And are they just spewing out these lines to students to hope that they'll quiet down? I found that to be insulting that you'd approach a 21-year-old girl and threaten her with her education because of a noise complaint. I get it. Things can get rowdy in a city. That's kind of the price you pay, though, when you agree to have a university in your town. There's going to be parties, and this by no means was a big party, but there's going to be parties, there's going to be people out drinking, there's going to be people acting quite lewd in public, and I don't condone any of that, there has to be a working relationship between the students and the bylaw officers, mm-hmm. and the police officers of this city. And I mean, that's just one example that I've had. I could list many.
So is it maybe a matter of not just the bylaw in existence, but in terms of practices of the city and how the city relates to the big university crowd that's here in terms of how we handle the bar scene and the nightlife and all that?
Well, The city's doing, as far as I'm concerned, they're doing well. Overall, they're doing well. I quite enjoy that they closed down the streets of downtown during specific hours. I wish that it was maybe more widely broadcasted because I still see people getting towed every single weekend. And I don't like seeing that because people genuinely park down there and do not know. I had a friend last week who was working downtown and got his car towed. And he was working down there for the night, and it still happened to him. And he didn't know either. So I wish there was better communication in that respect. And I know they do have signs up this year, which is great. I like the way the police interact with the students and the way, especially working downtown for myself over a year, how they helped us out in that scene with, unruly patrons or whatever. That was great. But I think that there is a lag, perhaps, in respect to the bylaw officers and how they handle certain situations. With the students, and they use the line, "I'm just doing my job," mm-hmm. and it's not one that I particularly agree with. We have just because you can do certain things, you do have the power to do certain things,
right.
Doesn't necessarily mean you have to do those specific things. Right. And I think that's I think the party bylaw is something that needs to be repealed, absolutely. The noise complaint bylaw already does a sufficient amount to ensure that if a neighbor has a complaint with somebody, be it students or anybody for that matter, that the city can come by and deal with that person on that property with the proper due processes.
Another thing you're talking about in terms of how it relates to nightlife is taxis in the city. And for maybe those who don't know what it's like to not be able to get a cab between the hours of 11 and 3 a.m. on Friday and Saturday night, what's what's the problem with how taxis are in the city?
It's more than just what's happening between 11 and 3 a.m. And granted, those, and we'll see it, you know, with homecoming and Halloween and St. Patrick's Day, and you know, when the weather's nice and students love to hang out downtown, and that causes fights, that causes damage to businesses, and that makes makes the night for police officers and security guards a hell of a lot more interesting. If there was a better if there's better access to taxis in the city, I think that a lot of these problems would be alleviated. Moreover, there's a monopoly in taxis in the city, and it's not just Guelph, it's all over Canada for that matter. And I think that we have a really good opportunity. Guelph, the citizens of Guelph always talk about, you know, being the future of tomorrow, and that's Guelph leading the way in business and in how we want to see cities in Canada grow. And I think Uber Taxi is the ideal way to end the cities around North America and around the world, and the monopoly the taxi cabs have on transportation services in cities. Uber Taxi, essentially anyone, any private citizen can register their car to be a taxi in the city. And it basically works on a reputation basis, just like eBay or Amazon would. Same deal applies there. And it's been found in the cities that they beta tested this project in to lower transportation costs for people by 25%. Massive. And they expect those prices to be lowered even more. The hit on the user's wallet to be lowered even more, because now they're finding ways where they can link certain routes together, so two people can split a cab, or this Uber taxi cab, they can split it and lower costs even more. So as this program grows, and I want Guelph to be at the cutting edge of something like this, as this program grows, it's not only going to alleviate all the pressure on taxis to compensate at hours like 11 or 11 p.m. to 3 a.m. or compensate when there's an unneeded bus strike in the city, and it's going to allow the private market to take up some of that market, provide a better service, and drive down costs. And I'm all for that.
And to address one more thing from your platform on your website, you talk about open source democracy, which sounds interesting, but what is open source democracy?
Essentially, it's an idea, and I don't know that it's been necessarily applied in any of the municipalities or even provincially or federally, to my knowledge. However, my dream, what I envision of open source democracy being, is essentially people can log online from the comfort of their own home, and they can see what's going on at City Hall and have discussions online about what's going on at City Hall. They can voice their opinion through polls, through discussion boards. Essentially, I envision Guelph in the next, you know, 4 years and going forward as a city where people aren't just engaged during elections. We have a very vibrant community when it comes to elections around here. People really like being involved in that. I mean, I think you saw, if, I don't know if you knew what happened when Harper came to town during the last federal election. There was hundreds of students outside the Delta Hotel participating. Yeah. But there seems to be a lull when elections aren't around. And Guelph's 33%, I believe it was, municipal voter turnout in the last election, I think is an extraordinary example of people just not being involved or caring enough about municipal politics. This is my proposal for people to stay involved in municipal politics throughout the course of a 4-year term. Get people involved, make it easy for them to find out what's going on in City Hall, make it even easier for them to communicate how they feel about the decisions happening at City Hall, so we can start holding politicians accountable for their actions.
Well, it's an interesting thing that every time a municipal election comes up here, one of the things you often hear is the need for more transparency, the need for more communication, and then the 4 years later, you hear the same things, even from the same candidates.
It's these dog whistle words that it's just so easy to throw around. You know, we need more transparency, we need change, we need less debt, we need less act. People make a lot of money off of creating these terms that they sound very nice.
Yeah.
They're all face value. It's a facade. Candidates don't actually have any invested interest in making things more transparent, because God forbid the public actually finds out what's going on behind closed doors.
Yeah.
You only see these things when you settle in a $6.8 million lawsuit with an Urbicon. These are the only time these things come to light. and it's extremely unfortunate. And I'm hoping that with this idea of an open source democracy, we can eliminate that and make people more involved with the processes of City Hall.
Well, let's assume for a moment that you are successful in your bid to become mayor, and you and it is October 28th, and you're looking at taking the mayor's office.
Yeah.
What is the first year of the Donovan administration going to look like?
A lot of talking, I think. Yeah, a lot of talking and a lot of coffee. I'm gonna need to get up to speed with, I guess, the finite intricacies of City Hall and how it runs. I would really like to find, our wants versus our needs. Let's get that on the table. Agenda item 1A through Z is wants versus needs. How can we make this city run more efficiently? How can we improve the infrastructure in this city? And what are the projects that are happening in the city right now that we don't need? We have crumbling roads. I know, I'm a biker. I ride my bike everywhere in this city. I also drive a car from time to time, and I know just how bad the roads are in this city. And to me, it seems like a waste of money to dump $6 or $7 million into St. George Square when we could be putting that money into resurfacing the roads. And yeah, you know what? It may not be as elaborate as the plans currently for what's happening down there, but it's all about prioritization. And I can't say right now, it'd be irresponsible of me to say that this is the first thing I want to cut or the second thing I want to cut. We have to prioritize between wants and needs and where we are in each of those processes. And that's how I envision my first year of office going.
Every election has sort of a set things that people are talking about regularly, but what, in terms of your own ideas or talking to the general public out campaigning, what is maybe an underreported issue people are looking at this election?
I'm hearing a lot of the same things over and over again, but one thing that I'm really interested in, especially now that I work in Guelph and I work alongside a lot of tradesmen, mm-hmm. and business owners, is how difficult and frustrating it is to do business in this city. And every day I'm learning a little bit more by talking to people and working in the industry of just how difficult it is to operate businesses in this city. I mean, whether it's through taxes, whether it's through the current administration not particularly liking maybe industrial development in certain places of the city. There's a lot of things that are wrong right now with how our city handles the potential for business to come here and create jobs. And I think that that's something that I really want to learn more about, regardless of whether or not I get into office, because the easier it is for businesses to operate in a certain jurisdiction, the more money gets invested into that region and the more jobs come to that region. I mean, take a look at Burger King as a perfect example. It's easier for them to do business in Canada, so they move their corporate offices to Canada. Yeah, it may not bring jobs right away, but what it does is it brings investment into certain areas. I want investment to be brought to Guelph.
Mm-hmm. Is there a specific example that you've been told? Because you're talking about the Guelph factor, which is maybe one of those dog whistle words you were talking about. But I think a lot of people have brought this up, that there's a perception or a reality to the difficulty of doing business in Guelph, and not a lot of specific examples given.
Yeah, and it's hard to pinpoint one specific example, but I know that for certain projects and bigger projects, I don't want to say any name, but there are monopolies, or at least perceived monopolies, by businesses in Guelph, that certain groups are continually getting the nod for certain projects, and it's not as open a bidding process as one would like. Moreover, a lot of these big projects are being handled by businesses outside of the city of Guelph. Mm-hmm. Granted, municipalities like Toronto and Mississauga, Brampton, Vaughan, they have the capacity to handle these massive projects easier than Guelph does, because the supplies are generally all in the GTA, right, to do these projects. But that doesn't necessarily mean that Guelph contractors or Guelph businesses should be out of the process altogether. We need to find ways that we can not only keep it easy to operate business in Guelph, but when new opportunities come for one business in Guelph to help another business, let's use the contracting as an example, that we go to the Guelph businesses first to have that opportunity brought to them. And not just always the same Guelph businesses either. Let's open up the table a little bit and see who can and get a bidding war going. Let's try and drive down prices while boosting the city's economy.
Well, you've said you're a libertarian, and yeah. One of the things that I think a lot of people are talking about is election. How can government be a force for good in people's lives, or can it be a force for good? I mean, depending how severe a libertarian you are, but...
Yeah, I always get that question. Are you a libertarian? When I tell people I'm a libertarian, does that mean you're an anarchist? And I don't think so. I think there's an appropriate use use for government on the municipal, provincial, and federal levels. There needs to be a certain amount of regulation, and I'm not sure, again, this is one of those questions that very open, it can be taken many different ways, and I don't want to speak to specifics because I don't have any specific examples of how I think government could be a force for good or a force for bad. Personally, what I'm working on right now is seeing how government could aid in economic situations in this in the city of Guelph, and I think that all starts from staying out of the way of economics. Mm-hmm. That's a tenet to libertarianism. Government doesn't create jobs; the market creates jobs. Entrepreneurs create jobs. Businesses create jobs. Just because they throw a bunch of money into renovating St. George Square doesn't necessarily mean that people are still going to want to go down there and shop in Quebec Street Mall. People go places because they like the businesses that are in those places. So I say, if you really want to make Guelph, if the city really wants to make Guelph a place where people can come downtown and invest their money in the shops downtown, lower the taxes, take away a lot of the regulation, let businesses pop up, and it doesn't just necessarily have to be small businesses. Let's open up the board a little bit and allow people to operate easier in this city.
Well, this might be the most difficult question of all. Where can people learn more about your campaign?
Localsforliberty.com is my campaign website. All my information's on there. If they really want to, they can knock on apartment A of 9 King Street and talk to me some more. But again, I've been involved in politics for a very long time. I've been interested in politics and been reading newspapers from front to back since I was 10 years old. I love having conversations with people. And I don't necessarily need you to agree with me on every one of my principles or every one of my ideas that I put forward. I think if you go to my website and read my platform, you'll read that you'll understand that all I need you to agree with me on is that we need more liberty in this city, and we need less taxes, less debt, and more transparency.
Well, I think that's something probably everyone can agree with. So
I hope so.
Andrew Donovan, thanks for joining me. Good luck with the campaign.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
And once again, that was Andrew Donovan. You can find his mayoral platform and interact with him at Locals for Liberty. That's localsforliberty, all one word, .com. And you can find out all about Andrew there. As a reminder, Election Day is October the 27th, but before that, if you're interested in mayoral debates, there are two coming up. One is on Tuesday at the University of Guelph during the lunch hour. I'm not sure how many of the candidates will be there, because, you heard Andrew talking about it's difficult when you work for a living and, there's a debate in the middle of the day. But that's in the University Center Courtyard at noon on September the 30th, Tuesday, and then the Chamber of Commerce mayoral debate is on October 9th in the City Hall Council Chambers. And if you can't make it on October 9th, the debate will be played on Rogers TV several times throughout the month of October. You can check the website for their local Rogers TV channel for the full schedule of when the debates are airing on Channel 20 here in Guelph. The theme music for the Guelph Politicast is provided by The Crazy Pills and Break It Down. Podbean is our host, and you can go to guelphpoliticast.podbean.com to find all our back episodes and take a listen to the past seasons of the Guelph Politicast. And finally, keep it tuned to Guelph Politico for all the latest election news, insights, candidate profiles, and podcasts. And I hope that we will have the complete set of mayoral candidates online very soon. Stay tuned for my interview with Joseph St. Denis coming up in a couple of days, and then I will hopefully be back with the interviews with both Cam Guthrie and Mayor Farbridge. Stay tuned. Other than that, thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.